go out on the ocean, and if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean, set me up on my pony, on my boat. Now if I were Roy Rogers, I'd sure enough be single. I couldn't bring myself to marry an old dame. Just be me and Trevor. We'll go riding through them movies, and we buy a boat, and on the sea we sail. And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean, set me up on my pony, on my boat.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Thursday, April 19th, 2018 edition of the American Awakening. I am your host, Michael Herzog, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. And yes, sometimes I feel like buying a pony, putting it on my boat, and sailing off. And I'll tell you why. Okay, a few announcements I'm going to make here. You guys, you know, you guys are starting to make me feel like Inspector Clouseau in the Pink Panther. first of all, I've been in contact, as I mentioned to you the other day, with former Army Intel Officer Scott Bennett, in charge of counterterrorism money laundering, and he will be on my show next Wednesday. Now, this is going to be about tracking the money laundering and the Clinton Foundation and all the people that are connected into who actually was involved in ISIS funding, training, and all that stuff. Now, also another announcement for you listeners out there who've been pestering me to find or to have Brendan O'Connell on my program. I was able to, through my sleuthing and Inspector Clouseauing, I was able to track Brendan O'Connell down last night, hiding under his bed somewhere in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I was up till 4 o'clock in the morning talking to this guy, very interesting guy with a lot of information to share. Now, he has sent me just a litany of videos that I'm going to have to go through over the weekend and bone up to speed on, but I'm going to be bringing him up on the air next week. I'm not sure what day. Now, yesterday, as you guys know, I did a rebroadcast, and I did a rebroadcast of the interview I did with Jim and Joanne Moriarty on the 5th of April, and I did that for a reason. I interviewed them again yesterday on Erskine Overnight. It was taped, and it will be on this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday night. But the reason that I rebroadcast it is because the last time I had them on my program, which was a couple weeks ago, they had promised – I told them to save the two other miracles for later, for another show, to share with the listening audience of how they actually escaped Al-Qaeda and got out of the country. So we're going to cover that, but I – was almost woken up this morning by Jim and Joanne. My phone rang. I was shortly out of bed, talked to them for about a half an hour, and I decided to bring them up again today because they've got more intel to share with us, folks. So with that, now there's some noise going on in the background. Jim and Joanne, are you with me?
We're right here. Proud to be with you.
All right. Well, thank you. I heard some knocking and banging going on in the background, so I wasn't sure if that was you or whether that was my engineer, my navigator. But at any rate, you know, folks, if you haven't already, you need to pick up a copy of this DVD. Now, I bought six of them, and I sent them out, one to John Stadtmiller, one to Jim Fetzer, one to Erskine. I mean, I shot them out all over the place, and it's very important that you guys know this. And I'm going to ask you again. Buy a copy of the DVD, buy five, buy six of them, and pass them out to your friends, because there's a massive awakening going on here, folks. I was comparing notes with Scott Bennett as well, but also with Brendan O'Connell till 4 o'clock this morning, and this is huge what's happening here, and the amount of information that is about to be shared with you guys, not only with myself, John Stadtmiller is going to have Jim and Joanne up on the air here shortly. I talked to him this morning. The amount of information that's coming out and the awakening that's going on is mind-blowing. So with that, Jim and Joanne, how are you doing today?
Great. We're doing proud fine. To be with you.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Listen, now, when I had you up last time, and the audience just heard a rebroadcast of it yesterday, I had cut you short, Jim, on there was three miracles that got you out of Libya, and you were able to escape the clutches of Al-Qaeda, if you will. So I'd like for you to give an overview again and share those three miracles before we share more intel that we talked about this morning with the audience. So go ahead and start there.
Okay. Well, in our attempt to escape out of Libya, we had received, of course, no assistance whatsoever from the U.S. government. And the Russian ambassador put our names on a list of a rescue ship that was being sent out from Malta by the prime minister there to remove the remaining diplomats and foreign leaders and stuff that were still in Libya. And this was after Tripoli was taken over, overrun. And he put us on the list. And in our attempt to get on that ship, we didn't realize that the ship had been fired on and was moored 3 miles out. And I'm not that good a swimmer. So, you know, we didn't have a chance of getting there, but we didn't know that. So we were back and forth up and down the coast of Libya, 42 miles from Tripoli east and back, with about every 100 meters of blockade with Al-Qaeda, these guys with AK-47s stopping and checking points and everything. And the driver and co-driver we had, that the hotel had supplied, was told to tell them we were journalists. And so when they heard that, oh, they were happy because the journalists had been lying for them the whole time. And finally, we ended up getting trapped in the Tripoli Harbor. The second time we went in there, they held us about an hour, and then truckloads of these guys came in, probably 40 or 50 of them, all of them with AK-47s, and they filled our faces and everything with their gun barrels. And the guy that was heading that group had a piece of paper, and he said, your game is up, we know who you are. And he had a list with our names handwritten on it, and they took us to their torture center. And they kept us there for a long time, and they were. It was the Radisson Hotel. Didn't have any electricity or any electricity or water or anything. Nothing was functioning except the emergency generator to take the wounded soldiers, living soldiers that they were bringing them in, taking them up to the mezzanine area and torturing them to death. So after a long time, this big fat bald imam came in. Early, I guess, the second morning, came in there, and he looked down his nose at us and said something in Arabic. We didn't understand what it was, and then he left. And shortly thereafter, the man that had been the head of the IT department at the Corinthia Hotel, where we had been staying forever, it's a six-star hotel, nice hotel. His English was real good, but he was never real friendly. But he came over there and sent the other drivers back. And I was up there trying to get our passports back, trying to get those guys to release us to the rescue ship. And he was telling Joanne, he said, listen, what y'all didn't understand is that imam that came in there said that y'all would be killed and chopped up and burned, and they've set a kill zone up two blocks away. So when you leave here and head towards the rescue ship at that little underpass, they're going to stop you and they're going to kill you, chop you up and burn you. And Joanne said, well, you better tell my husband that, because, you know, he needs to understand that. He's trying to get on that and get us back in the truck and get us down the road. Now, that man was an Al-Qaeda operative. And believe me, if anybody in Al-Qaeda, if they look at somebody cross-eyed, they'll slit their throat. So his reason, which he told us, that he came over there to help us, he said, I'm going to try to take this truck, the van, back the other direction, back to the Corinthian. That would be west rather than east, because he said they've set up a kill zone. And he said, I know you and your wife have been here only trying to help the Libyan people, so I'm here to help you. That was the first miracle. And he took back roads and did get us back to the Corinthian Hotel. The second miracle was the guy that was, he was an Al-Qaeda operative or whatever. He was running the UN rescue ship, taking IOM rescue ship
immigration
back to Benghazi from Tripoli to evacuate the nurses and doctors and stuff and from that war zone now in Tripoli back to Benghazi. And he came to our hotel. He had known Fatima II, who's the sister of the president of Mauritania, she had asked if she could go with us to try to get on the rescue ship. So she was part of our group, and she said, I want you to meet this guy. He's Al-Qaeda, but he's not really a bad guy, and he wants to put us on the rescue ship and take us to Benghazi. And I said, hell, that's where the head of the snake is. And she said, no, I've called friends over there, and all the bad guys are over here killing everybody in Tripoli. There's nobody left in Benghazi. So he got us. He said, I promise you I'll take you in my personal van, get you on the ship, and make sure when you get to Benghazi, that you're not put on the buses going to the Egyptian border, because they'll be waiting for you there. But nobody in Benghazi knows that you've escaped being murdered, because there's no communication between Tripoli and Benghazi. Those lines have been cut. So that was the second miracle. He was Al-Qaeda, and he absolutely got us on that ship and got us to Benghazi. When we arrived in Benghazi, they offloaded everybody else in these buses to Egypt, and six of us were taken to the Beastie Hotel in Benghazi. And the reason that hotel was important, it had a U.S. consulate office in that hotel. Had a European consulate office. So when we got there, Joanne and I went up to the U.S. consulate office, this guy barely spoke any English. We said we needed help. We needed to get out of the country. You know, they were trying to kill us. And he said, oh, I'm not here to help Americans. I'm only here to help the rebels. So he sent us to the devil. We went downstairs to the European consulate office. That guy was much nicer, but he said, you're not part of the European Union. I can't help you. And by the time we'd gotten downstairs the second time, evidently the concierge had recognized that the six of us were not typical mercenary rebels that they'd been dealing with. So they had called the ranking member of the UN-installed government. He was the number three guy in the National Transitional Council. He was in Benghazi. They called him. They said, we've got some people here that are important. One of them is a prince from Bahrain, and there's some Americans. And so he sent his security guy over, verified who we were. Then he himself came over, and he said, when's the last time you had anything to eat? And we said, well, 4.5 days ago. He said, I'm going to invite you to breakfast. This was still during Ramadan. He said, I'm going to invite you to breakfast at this hotel at sundown. He said, I can't be with you. I'll be with my family. But he said, I'm then going to have my security man stay with you and see if we can't get you on a plane leaving Benghazi, taking wounded soldiers to Tunisia. And he said, it'll be leaving sometime tonight. That was the third miracle, because really and truly, the communications had not been opened up. He didn't know we were on their kill list. And good to his word, we had a very nice meal that night. And then his security guy stayed with us, put us on this airplane to Tunisia. And we left, oh gosh, it was probably 2:30 or 3 in the morning, completely dark. Yeah, there was no communication, and the plane was a raggedy-ass old plane. When you look, it was a 727, but when you look down between your feet, you could see daylight. You know, the doors were missing off the overhead compartments, and the pilot flew low level without any lights, because he said no-fly zone was still in existence and didn't want to get hit by rifle fire or anything. So
by rocket fire.
Yeah, and we landed in Tunisia, incidentally, on that trip, there were four men that the Bahraini prince recognized, that they were middle-level military from Qatar.
They were in camouflage utilities.
Yeah, and he said he knew that. He said from their speech and their accent, they were not highly educated, but they were middle, like captains or majors or stuff like that. And when they landed in Tunisia, in their overhead compartments, they had two metal frame dollies, real heavy rollers. The dollies themselves probably weighed 75 pounds apiece, and they were made of angle iron, and they set them down by the conveyor belt, and these two reinforced boxes came down the conveyor belt. It took four of them to lift the first one up, put it on the dolly, The second one that came through there was probably 15 minutes later. It had had a forklift hole it punched in the side of it. When they lifted up and tipped it to set it on this dolly, some gold buttons rolled out of it. They stuffed those back in there. So what they had done is they had melted down the gold of Libya to get rid of the hallmark and poured it into cupolas. And so that makes a little button about the diameter of a 50-cent piece and about a half inch thick. So they eliminated the hallmark. But we saw those two boxes, and they were very, very heavy. Four big, strong guys. It was all they could do to lift those off the conveyor belt onto those dollies.
Well, Jim, yeah, I know. Yeah, we covered that point okay. The other day. So, what you know, I want to kind of fill in a few blanks here. The ship that you actually got on, the Russian ambassador that put you on the list, you were actually rescued by a Russian vessel, correct?
No, we never got on that ship. That ship,
you didn't?
No, never did. It was never. It never came into port. We don't know what happened to it.
The ship was fired on, they said, by the U.S. Mercenaries, rebels that were there, Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And it moored itself 3 miles out because of that. They had actually sent a tugboat to pick us up without his lights on, and we didn't know that. We were talking to the Prime Minister's office in Malta, but they never said anything about a tugboat or where it was.
So we're talking on satellite phone. We, you know, this was hours back and forth, all up and down with these roadblocks every 100 meters, you know, and it was a real dangerous trip, you know, and we were back and forth all the way up and down that coast twice, and we never got to that ship.
Okay, so to be clear here, the United States government didn't want you to get out. They wanted you dead.
That's true. And actually, Michael, the man, I want to give you his name. His name's Maxim Maximov. He was the Russian ambassador. And when he called us, he said, "You realize, don't you, that your country is not going to help you, but we would like to." And when I know him now as the ambassador to Iraq, he's the plenipotentiary ambassador from Russia to Iraq now.
Okay, well, let me ask you, this might sound naive because I haven't really focused my attention on Iraq. Who specifically is – we installed a puppet government in Iraq, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So Maxim Maximov is the Russian ambassador to Iraq for the puppet government that we installed over there, correct?
Yep. Okay. Yes.
All right. So we got that. Now, we had spoken this morning on the telephone – and I know we had touched on this in the last interview, but I wanted to expound on this for the sake of the listening audience, because this is very important. The ties, what happened in Libya, folks, is what we're seeing unfold to a degree in Syria. But also, what is not said, I did a show, I think it was a couple months ago, regarding these refugees coming in. When this whole immigration thing was up and they're only allowing so many in, and Trump stepped in and said he's going to cut the amount down. This was, I believe, last year that they went through this. But these refugees are coming in here, and these humanitarian organizations, you know, subsidiaries of the Catholic Church and other groups are bringing these people in. They're bringing them through. They're looking for any medical issues they have to put them on Medicaid. They're giving them pocket money, and they're sending them off, you know, throughout, dispersing through different places in the country. But when you guys and I talked this morning, and this is a key issue here, back when the mercenaries came in and they took over the Libyan government, they also took over the passport office, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, and still to this day, they are in control. Was there a puppet government installed in Libya, or is it the CIA is running Syria with the Mossad? How is that working?
Well, there was a puppet government immediately installed by the UN. Full of Muslim Brotherhood.
Okay.
And they were absolute despots, bad guys.
Okay. All right. Jimmy, hold that thought. Despots and bad guys. Going to go to a break. We'll be back in three. We'll continue with this. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my guests again, Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Be right back.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7 with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right, doing the best you can. Well, it's all right, as long as you lend a hand.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host. It's all right as long as you lend a hand. And all of us need to lend a hand here, folks, because we're all in this together. Now, back to these despots over there, Jimmy. Go ahead, continue with it.
Okay, I'm going to continue on. The puppet government that was set in was all about Muslim Brotherhood, and a lot of radicals were put in there. The Libyans, of course, 96% of them are against radical Islam, so this was not anything they supported. Now, the pretense of it was that they were going to have another election in 2014. They were going to set up a UN-sponsored election where they was monitored and all the Libyans could vote on a new government. And that happened. Very few Libyans voted because 2.5 million of them were in exile. Hundreds of thousands of them were dead. Many of them scared. Many of them in hiding. Many of them on the streets. It was a mess. So those that voted completely against the Muslim Brotherhood. They threw them all out of office. And they voted in a new group to go into office to start a new government. There were some filtered in there that the Libyans didn't like, but they got some. Well, what happened was the Muslim Brotherhood refused to accept the fact that they were voted out, so they started attacking the people that won the election. They started blowing up their homes, killing their children, kidnapping their wives, beating them up. So they moved that elected government to Tobruk on the east side of Libya, and they set up the House of Representatives that really was the true government of Libya. In the meantime, the old Muslim Brotherhood tried to reestablish themselves in Tripoli. And, of course, they had fights. There was all kinds of stuff going on. They were trying to control the oil. The other house tried to control the oil. And so the UN came in and said, we're going to, in 2015, we're going to develop a new government over here in Tunisia, and we're going to move that government in. And they appointed a government made up of a bunch of criminals. And Libya, all of Libya, said, no, we don't want your UN government. And what they did was, in the middle of the night, they snuck it into Tripoli by boat, brought it into Belhaj's place where he could protect them, and set themselves up as the new prime minister and government of Libya. And then, of course, the UN said, this is now the prime minister of Libya. This is now the legitimate government. And these guys have been there ever since. Their mandate ran out last December, but they're still there. They've been robbing Libya. They made deals with Italy and France that were illegal. They signed documents they couldn't sign. It just goes on and on. And even the Tobruk government has run out with his mandate now. There's supposed to be a new election this year. And the problem is that there's so many mercenaries there that are now fighting each other. It's not the Libyan people who are fighting anymore. It's these mercenaries, these different groups that want to control. There's militias. They're just gangs. And then there's Muslim Brotherhood. And then there's Ansar al-Sharia. And they sort of are all the same, but they all want to control. So they're fighting each other.
So the moral of this story is, anybody, anyone in the world that thinks their vote is counted, they're smoking dope. Because the people that are put into office are appointed by the bad guys.
Well, let me interject here and ask you this, and this is going to sound like maybe a ridiculous question, but when you tell me that the UN appointed these people and they're all criminals, well, then obviously the UN is just a puppet group that is owned and controlled by the Rothschild banking system, it sounds to me like.
Absolutely, another proxy 100%. Arm of them.
100%. Okay, so they come in by night. They run these criminals in here. They set up their puppet government and so forth. They run their central bank in here. And now what you've got here, and you guys are the key issue, because you're the only intel in the United States that's coming out of Libya, because from the mainstream news point of view, as we all know, we've heard crickets chirping about Libya ever since this whole thing happened. It just kind of went away because, remember, it was a humanitarian crisis and Muammar Gaddafi's a bad guy and we've got to bring democracy into Libya. And they actually did the exact opposite. They went in and destroyed that country. They poisoned it with depleted uranium. They killed upwards of 1 million people, if not more, and displaced them. They made an absolute mess out of this place. And then they put in these puppet criminals with these warring factions back and forth jockeying for power. Do you see, as far as the tribal people are concerned, any way out of this to restore their country back to where it was before, guys?
The only way out is through the tribes. That's the only way out. See, these guys don't listen to the tribes. They don't even know the tribes. They don't
want to know them.
They can't speak to the tribes. The tribes are, every Libyan is a member of a tribe. Uh-huh. So the tribes are coming together. They're working on coming together. The problem is their communication systems are shut down all the time. They're threatened. They're beat up. They're constantly
NSA delivered into Libya in 2011, March or April of 2011. They delivered two containers full of the most sophisticated jamming and recording equipment, period. So they can at will turn off all cell communications, all the TV networks. They can control completely Libya. They black it out. They also use those systems to target the legitimate leaders of Libya, the tribal leaders and stuff like that. And if they find them, they send their puppet out to go kill them, you know. And they have done that over and over and over again.
Don't tell me. Let me guess. This technology that they're using to jam is probably Israeli owned and invented.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll take a break, folks. Remember that, because I'm going to connect those dots with Brendan O'Connell next week. So we'll be back in three. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening with Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh. Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guests, Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Now, I want to remind you guys, you know, ever since we went in there to save the Libyan people under humanitarian guidelines because Muammar Gaddafi, who wasn't even in power and was a bad guy, okay, ever since then, ever since this whole thing has gone on, we've heard crickets chirping out of the mainstream media. So they go in, they install a criminal government. They're controlling the country. The tribes are trying to get them out. There's warring factions going on over there. Now, I wanted to ask you guys, the criminals that are controlling this government, I'm sure, are also controlling the flow of oil or the sale of oil. Am I right there?
Yes, and they're receiving the benefit of all the gas. There's two big gas pipelines that flow into Italy. So that money is flowing, not all of it, but a big portion of it flows to the rebels. They're all mercenaries. You've got to understand, these are paid.
It might as well be ISIS or Ansar al-Sharia or whatever you want to call them.
Okay.
There's people in this government, Michael, that most people don't know. I could line it out exactly. People won't even know their names. One of them, all of them are bad guys, but one of them put sarin gas on Bani Walid, the hometown of Warfala tribe. This was in 2013-14, and it made the news because Dr. Corsi reported it through us, and they had proof of it. Now, here's the UN appointing this guy who used sarin gas knowingly, and for sure the UN knows that. Talk about hypocrisy. I mean, amazing hypocrisy.
They appointed him what?
They appointed him. He's right under the prime minister. He's first secretary of state or something. Or maybe in charge of the security. It's an absolute joke what they've done to this country. And understand this, Libya had a pure democracy before the UN ever went in, before the US and NATO went in there. They had two houses. They had an elected house of representatives, and they had the second house, which was the general secretariat of the tribes, two representatives from every tribe in that 200 member body. And those two bodies that ran their government, they had a prime minister that was over the top of that. But the tribal people, if they had any complaint, could go to their tribal leaders, and it would go right up to the government if it couldn't get solved.
So the fact that the claims that there was no democracy is an absolute farce. But look at this, exactly the same thing was done in Syria. A couple of weeks after the McCain-Obama invasion of Syria, they tried to set up a phony government. The UN tried to set up a phony government there and have them run Syria, and the Syrian people wouldn't have any part of it. The vote, the UN election in Libya elected people Syria. Who were not part of the agenda of the Zionists.
Mm-hmm.
The UN had an election in Syria. 80-something 89. Percent of people voted for Assad to remain in power, and they've been trying to throw those election results out ever since and have another phony election. So if a real election takes place, the bad guys never win. If we could have a real election here in the United States, we could throw out everybody in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just doesn't happen. They're the ones counting the votes. And they don't care who you vote for. They care who counts the votes. And with that, they always win.
Syria, they cut their fingers and marked their ballots in blood to prove that it was them who voted, because they knew they were going to try to do that to them.
Wow. Well, let me ask you, I mean, you know, the UN has also been propped up there since World War II, or after World War II, you know, as this supposedly benevolent worldwide overseer of justice and humanitarian rights and so forth. But really, they're nothing like that. They are the exact opposite, if anything.
Never has been. It's a farce, and we never should have joined. We shouldn't remain memberships, and we shouldn't continue to pay. But that's another pawn. That's another accoutrement of the Zionists.
It's another proxy arm. But you know,
I want to bring this thing home, because we're talking about places far off. It's 6,000 miles away from Houston to Libya. It's far to Syria. But I want to bring this thing home. This is a clear and present danger here in the United States, because since October of 2011, the bad guys, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood, have owned the passport office in Libya. And what they do is the CIA has 28 training centers in Libya.
They used to.
They bring these mercenaries in from all over the world. They train them in subversion and terrorist activities, etc. They're given a new Libyan name and a new Libyan passport, and immediately from the U.S. State Secretary of State's office, they're issued a permanent green card and a multi-entry visa. They are funded in the United States with $1 million to $4 million, and there's 1,000 to 4,000 of those every month coming into the United States, establishing terror cells in this country. That's been going on since 2011. Put a pencil that. How many of them are here?
Well,
and what they've been able to do. That's a danger to all of us.
Oh, I know. And see, that's where I wanted to connect the dots on this, because number one, when this started, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, so she was involved into it up to her eyeballs. What a surprise there. Number two, the show that I did regarding these immigrants and refugees and the big taboo that, you know, went wrong with Donald Trump cutting this down and so forth. And if we remember back during the campaign, you know, Hillary Clinton just wanted to open the doors and bring everybody in. Remember that? And she mentioned that. Well, Trump cut it down a little bit, but there's a difference between immigrants, legal or illegal, and refugees. These people are coming here as refugees. Am I correct so far?
They're coming here as honored businessmen and people to set up businesses and well-funded, you know, $1 million to $4 million each. They're coming here to set up terrorist cells inside this country. They're not refugees. They're citizens in the United States, and you know, given cards launched by the Secretary of State's office.
You know, last year, guys, I stayed with John for a while, and I went back to Indiana to help my son. He was building a house there at the time, way out in the sticks, between Bloomington, Indiana, and Bedford, Indiana, right out in the country. And there was a little town called Salisbury, and he lived outside of town. And the only thing that was within an earshot of him, there was a bar across the street, And there was a gas station with a little tiny mini mall in there with this – I can't even remember what the name of the place next door in the mini mall was, but it was something to do with you know, some humanitarian cover about, you know, helping so-and-so. And what was going in and out of there all the time and who owned that gas station were a bunch of Muslims. And they were very secretive, very, you know, you they were always asking, you know, how are you doing? And they would, every once in a while, they would make a comment that would lead my son to believe that they were actually watching his activities. And I'm wondering if that might not be a sell. Because what's happening, if you do the math, like you said, Jimmy, and there's 1 to 4,000 a month coming in here, all right, call it, let's call it 2,000 a month. That's 24,000 a year times 6 years. That's 150,000 of them. What they're doing, it looks to me like, is they're seeding an army specifically or strategically throughout this United States for what probably is a future event in civil unrest or whatever. But you had mentioned to me on the phone this morning that you actually were pointed to or oversaw an actual training camp up outside of Redding, California. Is that right?
Yeah. A militia up there, you know, who were very, very secretive guys, took us way out of the sticks, got up on a ridge and showed us with spotting scopes
where their camp
and
was.
Where this training center is, and they're teaching young people, men and women, young. There were from 12 to 25 in there, and they're teaching them hand-to-hand combat, use of knives,
weapons,
making explosives. And they had, in covert activities that this militia had done, they had diagrams of power plants and where to strategically place explosives and stuff and power plants to put them out of business. So these are absolute, clear, present danger locations throughout the United States. And at one time, I can't remember if it was Senator Black, somebody said that there was over 1,300 of those that had been identified by the FBI and CIA, and they're not touching them.
Well, there's some in New York they know about.
Yeah, they're all over the country. And yes, you're exactly right. They're seeding these people $1 million to $4 million, a lot of money. So they go in, filling stations, mini malls, that's strip centers. Those are real good for them because they're buying a lot of – they buy used cars a couple years old. They like Toyotas because they're dependable, you know. They're buying used cars. They pay cash for them. Then when their people come in, they immediately are delivered an automobile, and they have these huge bank accounts full of money that has been cleared by the Federal Reserve without any provenance on the money at all. Well, of course, we know where the money came from because there was $241 billion in cash and cash equivalents of Libya inside the United States. So these can be internal transfers from the Libyan money that was stolen to these terrorists that are coming into the United States at the rate of up to 4,000 a month. Well-funded. They've been trained by the CIA in Libya. These are people that are in here to invade and take over our country. Wake up, everybody. This is a clear and present danger.
And not only that, let me insert, we're not talking about nice guys that shoot. We're talking about guys that are covert, guys that are sneaky, that when they catch you, they're going to behead you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I read a little bit about the, you know, Sharia law and so forth, but under this radical Islamic culture, I believe they give you an opportunity to convert to Islam. And if you don't, you either have to pay a high tax or you're dead, one or the other. Because
inside Obamacare, there was that payment included in Obamacare.
Wait a minute. Expound on that. Repeat that again.
The gratuity or the penalty
300 pages of
paid to the Muslim Brotherhood was inside Obamacare. We have been paying, the government of the United States has been paying a penalty to Muslim Brotherhood
via Obamacare.
Inside Obamacare, those payments are defined and they're high. So we've been paying that since Obama got Obamacare passed. That's inside Obamacare.
Now, are we speaking specifically of that penalty in Obamacare under the IRS guidelines that if you don't...
No. This is in addition to that. No, this is a penalty. This is a payment to the Muslims, and really it's defined for Muslim Brotherhood. huge billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of payments as penalties because we not all converted to Islam.
Oh, my God. Okay, so now Trump last year was talking about repealing or getting rid of Obamacare, but it never really fully happened, did it?
No, they're not talking about repeal. They're talking about replacing it. That's a bunch of bullshit. Pardon the French.
Yeah, please, it's excrement on this show, Jimmy. Yeah. Okay. Or feces. Pardon okay, me. Very good. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, because repeal it, get rid of it. We had a great health care system before that. And if you went to emergency room, you didn't have any money, they didn't turn you away. That had happened in the United States forever. All the, you know, that was an absolute joke. The medical industry in the United States is the fifth largest economy in the world. So that was a takeover. That was this fascism that the U.S. government started in big time when Obama, when they took over the automobile industry. Can you believe that? The government went in and just stole General Motors, stole Chrysler Corporation. Nobody said anything about it. That shows who in Washington, D.C. is trying to do anything for the people of the United States, because all those stockbrokers and bondholders and everything went belly up, and all the money, the unions didn't want those corporations. They cashed out and took the cash rather than maintaining their participation in those companies. So that's pure fascism. Nobody said a word about it. The healthcare system, pure fascism. Nobody called it that. That's what it was.
You know, their reason was 30 million people are not covered. That's why we needed Obamacare. Well, how many people are in this country? 350 million.
Right.
That's not even 10% aren't covered. They could have worked something out to help those people without putting a new giant monster in there.
So, no, I agree. Go ahead.
The agenda was not to cover anybody. The agenda was to pass whatever they needed to pass for to finance their needs and to take over whatever they needed to take over.
Okay, so let me connect the dots here. So basically, buried in this Obamacare program is this hidden tax that people are paying that is a part of their outrageous premiums as a tax for allowing us to remain alive if we're not Muslims.
It's not classified as a tax. It's written in there, and it's a penalty that the United States, and there's a word for that, and I can't remember the name, but that name in Islam, there's a payment penalty you pay.
Yeah, I can look at
Islam. That is incorporated in Obamacare, and it is not even tied to the tax side of it. It's a payment the government makes, and that was never revealed in anything, but those are huge, huge, huge payments. And of course it was signed off on and passed. So, you know, that's been part of an agenda that none of us, when we finally wake up and finally realize what's really going on, you know, we're paying not to be Muslims. We're inviting terrorists in here. And these are hard guys. These are not under any circumstances refugees. They're not immigrants. They are warriors. They're terrorists being brought in here, well-funded. They're establishing these zones of training and to process more people through, etc.
Okay, so buried in this tag, or this penalty or whatever, and I'm looking it up because I got a list here of stuff under Sharia law, and there's one. It says Muslims should engage in taqiyya and lie to non-Muslims to advance Islam. That isn't it. I'm looking for the name that you were talking about regarding this, whatever it is, penalty or whatever. But, you know, think about this for a minute. You got, let's call it 4,000 Muslims or 4,000 lawyers, doctors, attorneys who are actually terrorists with phony passports that are given $1 to $4 million that come in here and they set up these camps or these, you know, little communities across the country. And we've heard about these places in Detroit, places in Michigan, where you dare not even go in there if you're a non-Muslim. Okay, but in this Obamacare, if they were to repeal it and the Muslim Brotherhood didn't get this penalty or tax anymore, could that be a possible reason why they've set these groups up, is to come out and behead everybody because they're not getting their penalty tax?
No, they're invasion. You know, we're being invaded. We're being invaded.
They have to take away the arms.
These guys come in by planes. They don't come in across the border illegally. They don't come in a cruise ship that George Soros has rented out for years to flow these things into to ports all over the United States. These guys fly in planes. They're not doctors and lawyers or nurses or anybody. These are hardcore terrorists. And they are buying filling stations. They're buying strip centers. They're buying these things in order to have a staging area to bring in more. So these guys are leaders of, if you want to call them cells or whatever, they're leaders that are brought in here to do the groundwork, set these facilities up, and then as these gazillions of phony immigrants come across the border, most of them men, flow in here, they go to these locations all over the United States, and they're already set, there's already the vehicle set in place. They're given cars, they've got houses, they've got all these things. So they're taking over, without anybody knowing it or talking about it, they're taking over areas. And then 20 of these guys, real hardcore terrorists, will go door to door and take our weapons away and slit our throats because
okay, they don't. Hold that thought. We got to go to a break. Be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
All right, folks. We're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guests, Jim and Joanne Moriarty. And, you know, I thought about this through the break, Jim, and you were talking about knocking on doors. You know, there has to be an incident to do that. And I'll give you an example. The Boston bombing, they did exactly that. They were knocking on doors with the excuse of looking for the Sarnoff brothers, and they were confiscating guns. Yeah. Now, if there's another false flag event, there has to be a trigger event, and there has to be an order given if these people are all organized to do so. And I know I could tell you this much. If they knocked on my door, they're not getting my – well, they might get my gun, but it's going to be the front end of the barrel, not the back. So anyway, continue.
Well, you know, that's – you can't imagine that U.S. even police or the military are going to go out and kill their brothers and sisters – to take their guns away. But you bring in a bunch of psychopathic CIA-trained terrorists, and what care are they going to have if they kill everybody? Well, they don't care. But you take 20 or 30 of those in a bunch, and they go door-to-door in your neighborhood, how successful are they going to be?
This is what they did in Libya.
Yeah, exactly what they did.
They went door-to-door. They took women, young girls, took them to rape houses. They killed people. They chopped up children. They one house I know somebody went into up in the mountains. They went to find it. They had gone house to house there. The people were all dead and hanging by their feet inside the house. All this kind of stuff.
They did the same thing in Syria. So we know their game plan. That's what they do.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, if everybody thinks it's not here, it's here.
Right. Okay. So we know their game plan. But the one thing that Americans have that the Libyan people didn't have, and the Syrian people, I'm assuming, don't have, is weapons.
That's right. That's right.
And so they would have a little bit more difficult time getting that done because, like the Japanese said in World War II, they didn't invade this country because they knew there would be a gun behind every blade of grass. So they would have to be a little bit more careful, I believe, in that kind of an advance than they would in Libya or Syria. Am I spot on there?
You are, but the thing about people in the United States, they're law-abiding. So if a law is passed that you have to give up your gun, how many are you going to give them up? You know, look, every day, we got to get rid of guns. We got to get rid of automatic weapons. They got to get rid of the big clips. Piece by piece. That's because the guns are the issue. And then in several states already, lots of cities, they're confiscating guns. They're charging huge penalties in some areas. If you don't turn in your gun, you get charged $1,000 per weapon in communities in Florida and New York and all over, you know, California. So they're doing it. They are trying to move to take over the guns. And the thing is, the law-abiding citizens are not the problem. They're not the ones shooting anybody. Hell, doctors kill more patients every year than guns by 10 times. So, you know.
I know. I've got the statistics on that. So, yes, the pieces to that puzzle fit because, you know, once they get the guns, now it's free reign. Now they've got these terrorist cells in here that can just have at us. We got to go to the top of the hour break. Phone lines will be open, 800-313-9443. Be back second hour with Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, and Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Stick around. Come.
There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price. And I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. I probably wouldn't if I could, 'cause I'm mad as hell. Can't bring myself to do what it is you think I should.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s countries where the world's dominant force are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.